Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Board YouTube channel for our Thursday afternoon show today, where we have a very fascinating episode, I think, on the way for you guys today. If you saw the thumbnail, if you saw the title, we're going to be talking predominantly about the Jonte Porter betting scandal that has gone on in the last week, where if you're living under a rock and don't know anything about it, a Toronto Raptors center allegedly was involved in some, I guess it's pretty much match fixing, where there were many bets on his unders in two separate games where he played less than 5 minutes due to an illness and due to an eye injury. So we're going to discuss perhaps the parameters around the situation, and I think that'll make for some interesting conversation. But we'll also be talking some more about the actual basketball side of the NBA, because the Houston Rockets have won 10 games in a row, and they are right on the heels of the Golden State Warriors for that final play-in tournament position in the Western Conference. So if you're excited for the episode or you're enjoying along the way, make sure you do hit that like button and subscribe to the channel. Not only do you get this show every Thursday, you also get the weekday morning streams Monday through Friday with myself and Pips NBA for NBA free picks. For starters, it's been 2 weeks since we had one of these shows as we're kind of navigating this part of the season with tanking, with players missing games. How have you been doing, Kirk Evans?
Doing well. Yeah, we're heading straight into tank season. Yes. Or that or every player on every bad team randomly got hurt at the same time.
Yes. Yeah, that's just a difficulty in navigating player props and any spreads. Yeah, just navigating the injury reports a lot of the time. However, you know, with the extra variants, I guess it can lead to some advantages as well if you can read those a little bit better. But yes, we are in the absolute thick of the tank season for sure around the NBA. And I mean, like a day like today, you have at least you have one nice spread here. The Bucks and the Pelicans, a nice close to even on the spread. But then you have the Celtics and Hawks with a 16-point spread. But hey, there was a 10-point spread where the underdog did win yesterday. So who knows what could go on in the NBA. But let's get right into the topic here to start us off. We're going to be talking, first of all, about Jonte Porter. This is like the most pressing news in, I don't know, I'll say the sports world. I'm sure I could think of something bigger right now. It is opening day in the MLB, but this is one of the biggest news stories in the sporting world at the moment here. Jonte Porter caught in the middle of a betting scandal. Again, if anybody doesn't know, there was a game on January 26th against the Los Angeles Clippers where he exited the game after 3 minutes with an eye injury, which he reportedly has sustained in the previous game. And the largest winning bet of the day, according to DraftKings on their platform, was Jonte Porter under three pointers made. And the, you know, happening once is kind of fishy. But then it happened again, I believe it was March 20th against the Sacramento Kings, where Jonte Porter exits the game after 4 minutes due to illness. And once again, DraftKings reported that the most amount of wins, or I guess most amount of profits, occurred on Jonte Porter unders in particular. Okay, for starters here, you know, there's been so much dialogue about this situation, about the integrity of the game, about, you know, guys letting your team down. I don't really want to focus on that today. I kind of want to focus, first of all, on the betting side of this. Just in your sort of estimation, for a player making over $400,000 a year, what could lead somebody to go in this direction? Let's say, like, because it's obviously alleged that he was a part of this. I'd say it doesn't look very good. But how much money do you actually think you could come away with in a sort of scheme like this?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, there's that picture of the parlay going around 80K. So it was 80K to win 1.2 million. I've seen some pretty reputable people say that picture is confirmed. Based on my understanding, that's a true DraftKings parlay as well. So I guess that's a pretty good example right there. Someone won, whoever it was, maybe just a really sharp player, thought Jonte Porter might be a little sick that night. Won, you know, 1.2 million on a Jonte Porter, same game parlay. So, look, it depends on how sophisticated you are. It depends on how well plugged in you are into the betting markets. My guess would be that one was something that was probably pretty planned out, and a DraftKings account that was probably nurtured to get to that point where they could kind of take advantage. So yeah, you know, if you're in the right spot and you know the right people and you have a lot of money, yeah, you could probably come away with, you know, in the seven figures. But also the problem with this, well, there are many problems, but the problem if you're Jonte Porter is to make a lot of money, you're going to have to do it at one of these big books that have you profiled as a losing bettor. And, you know, it's pretty obvious if you're betting $80K to win $1 million on Jonte Porter over or unders that you're going to get, you know, they're not going to just pay you out easy for that. So, you know, the plan overall seemed fraught from the beginning because he's just not a main enough player that wouldn't raise massive suspicion. So, yeah, I think that picture's real. So I think they probably did come away, you know, in the seven figures with at least with that one specific bet, but at the same time, they're not getting that money.
Yeah. So I haven't seen any like verification, but I'll trust you in saying so.
Yeah. So, how a Twitter account I saw
$80,000 down on DraftKings.
Well, my guess would be, well, and again, this is speculation, but my guess would be that it happened earlier in the season with Jonte, where it seems like he was in on it, and they realized, like, all right, how do we get more down on this? Okay, you set up a DraftKings account, you go to VIP, you probably put, you know, $300,000 in the account, $500,000, put, you know, $50K on some random stuff. It wins, it loses. You don't really care. They profile you as a total VIP. Because that if you want a ton down on especially something like this, you need DraftKings to think, or FanDuel or Caesars to think essentially you're a massive degenerate bettor who's going to lose unlimited amounts of money with them. You know, if this was a normal situation, yeah, you're probably getting a few thousand dollars down. But again, obviously this allegedly or seemingly was a pretty planned out event. So if you're a bit, I don't know, smart, like I think overall they were incredibly stupid about it. But, and also just doing this in general is obviously completely insane and people are probably going to end up in jail. But if you want to be smart about actually getting down, to me, that would be the best path of doing it. You know, lose maybe a few $100,000 on a DraftKings and make it appear like you're a complete loser and get whatever 50x limits, and then, you know, pounce when it's ready.
It almost feels as though, you know, this scheme kind of took place, first of all, on the 26th when there was an eye injury. And if it were to have happened, you know, he kind of went into the game knowing he had an eye injury and he knew he had an excuse to check out of the game. And then they kind of saw, maybe from that game, that it was really hard to get down the money that they wanted to get down. So then it became, okay, let's get this account set to the way we want it to be for 2 months. Then an illness is a great opportunity to say, like, nah, I just can't go today, or tell the coaches that I need to exit the game. That makes sense in the way it went down. I suppose I would say you probably have a better idea of how to get $80,000 down than I would. I saw the screenshot, went like, there's just no shot somebody got $80,000 down on an NBA bet in general, let alone a player prop, let alone a player prop with Jonte Porter involved. But as you said, even though you made that bet, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're ever going to see that $1 million, because an investigation obviously has been launched into this whole thing, and that account is definitely, and whoever is running that account will have a lot of issues. Go ahead.
I just think it's kind of, you know, in our landscape, in our betting space, especially even today, there's a lot of talk about limiting. You know, people get limited all the time.
I bet today.
No doubt. So people talk about limiting all the time, but it works in the exact opposite way as well. I think a major, you know, profit and revenue driving aspect of these businesses are people who are willing to lose millions of dollars to these sports books. I think that's a you know, we talk problem gambling, but it's huge friction between the books because, yeah, problem gambling is something that's supposed to be regulated, but it's also a massive profit generating aspect for these sports books. So if you appear as though you are a problem gambler and you are putting massive amounts of money down on, you know, stuff that they deem as not sharp, you can get huge limits for, you know, a limited amount of time before they flip. You know, Haralabob was talking today. That's kind of what he said he did to get huge amounts of money down. He flipped, you know, celebrities or massive degenerate gamblers to get those huge limits. So yeah, I think it's possible. I saw a guy who I trust in the industry who confirmed that parlay was real, and I had heard that offhand as well. So I do believe that was a real parlay. I also think these books, like people say, oh, it's Jonte Porter, but I don't really think books limit bets in that type of way. Like, I don't think they circle a player and look at it as, oh, this is like a lesser player, so you have less limits. I think it happens sometimes, and I think there's truth of you can get less down if less books have a certain player up. But yeah, I think that's probably pretty possible. And obviously, you know, Jonte Porter has access to a lot of money, and I'm sure the people he was doing this with also had access to a lot of money. So it doesn't shock me, but it's a circular problem because, you know, if you go small scale, you're probably not getting caught, maybe, but it's only really worth it for a guy making, you know, $1 million a year to make a lot of money if he's going to do this. And also, I'm sure there was a lot of people involved in this. Like, it wasn't just Jonte Porter, obviously.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, the bigger you go, the more likely you are getting caught. So, look, at the end of the day, it's just a completely insane plan, assuming that it's true. And he also did it in a way that was really easy to get caught. You know, there's an $80,000 bet on DraftKings and the guy leaves the game in 2 minutes. You're much more likely to get caught. So assuming it's all true, obviously it was just a completely ridiculous plan. And I think that they're probably going to lay the hammer down on this guy is my thought.
Yeah, there's no real, to at least my memory, no real precedent to something like this in the NBA where a player has, I'm not going to go as far as to say thrown a game, but like, you know, the Raptors are tanking. They've been kind of trying to lose anyways, but these 3 to 4 minutes, if this is true, he was not trying to perform his best for the team. I don't think we've ever seen really anything like that in a major North American sports league. Like, you know, we've had betting scandals. Like, obviously a very famous one is Pete Rose, but Pete Rose was betting supposedly on his team to win. We've never had a situation where a player is betting against themselves. This is astonishing, really. I don't even know. So no precedent. I don't even know how the NBA handles this. What sort of suspension would come into play?
Yeah. Well, so my guess is the NBA is going to handle this with kind of three facets. Well, one, like, I think they're going to go completely all out. Like, people are kind of talking about suspension. Like, if this is true, Jonte Porter could easily face prison time. Like, this is an illegal act. Donaghy went to prison for a while, so I don't really see why he wouldn't be criminally charged. If it's true, I imagine the NBA bans him for life. I would be shocked if they didn't do that. And then three, the NBA is so in bed with betting that my guess is the path they take is this is the legal betting market working correctly. We were able to be notified by the sportsbook that something was happening. We were alerted to it, and now this guy will never play again. If betting was offshore or illegal, it would be much more difficult for us to figure this out. And, you know, the betting would still happen, but we wouldn't be able to identify it. I'm not saying I agree with that by any means. There's obviously a ton of stuff. You know, if it was offshore, he could never have gotten these massive amounts down, assuming that it's true. So I don't necessarily agree with that, but I would be surprised if the NBA really took any other path than that.
Yeah, we're speaking here with, we're kind of just assuming he's done it. Obviously, but we're not trying to just say we're assuming he's done it. I would say the evidence is not, doesn't look favorable for him at this point, but we're kind of assuming here, but nobody quite has the understanding of if whether or not he's affiliated. This is a good segue into the next question I was going to bring up. I did want to talk about the regulated space, and has sports betting grown to be a problem? Have all these promotions become a problem? Has all of these all the books now in the regulated industry, all these commercials consistently going out because it's such a competitive space, so many different sports books trying to fight for every possible customer that they can, do you think it's become a problem here? Do you think that has a direct correlation with Jonte Porter potentially getting involved with something like this?
Yeah, I find this a bit hard to talk about just because I can find it comes off a little hypocritical, because, you know, in my life, I want to extract as much money from sports betting companies as humanly possible. So it's hard for me to, you know, really come up from this high horse and say, oh, these sports books are so bad, blah, blah, blah. Like, for me to make money, I need these sports books to also make money. So it's tough. That being said, yeah, I think the ads have probably gone a little overboard. I think they really jumped in, you know, as quick as possible. They didn't kind of like have any, you know, okay, let's ease into sports betting. It was from the jump, they kind of really were totally in bed. That being said, I think it's kind of like any other vice in our society. Like, yeah, maybe they should probably limit advertising. I also think just the endless advertising kind of rubs a lot of people the wrong way, so it might just not be the best for the NBA. But I think that at the same time, this might have been a bit of a perfect storm. There aren't very many players in the NBA making less money than Jonte Porter, and there aren't very many players in the NBA who, you know, this would make any financial sense for. So, and then also guys like Jonte Porter typically don't have props. So I think that the NBA is going to lay an absolute hammer down, and then, you know, it'll be probably pretty tough for a player to think that this is a good idea in the future. But yeah, there's certainly problems. Like right now, within the last month, we've had Temple in the NCAA getting accused of rigging games. Otani, when you were going on, what's the biggest sports story in sports right
That's
now?
True.
It's probably Otani betting. So, you know, the three biggest stories in the end, or two biggest stories in sports being negative gambling stories. One guy potentially betting with an illegal bookmaker and the other potentially betting on his own unders is certainly a really bad look for how, you know, how short the lifespan so far has been. Like, we're not very new into, or we're not very experienced in legalized gambling. Like, this has been around for a few years. So, yeah, for all these stories to be coming out all at the same time, I think they probably take the position of, you know, this was going to happen. And it probably was happening anyway, but now we're regulating it and now we can identify it. How true that is, I don't know. But I've also seen, you know, a lot of like, this is the end of civilization as we know it. Everyone's going to be addicted to gambling. Everyone's going to lose all their money. Gambling's been around forever. If you really wanted to do it, you could. Obviously, it's getting more pushed into kids' faces. And I think it probably is going to be more of a problem for, like, you know, younger addicted gamblers. But I think that's also kind of the regulations, like, need to deal with that and need to figure out the best way to do it. But I don't think it's like a 5-scale fire. I think it's a problem, but something that can be dealt with.
Well, as far as the ads go, there's so many sports books trying to compete for customers here. It's a very competitive space, especially as regulation hit in Ontario. All these sports books came into market. A few of them no longer exist, but all these sports books came into the market and they were trying to fight for customers. It had to be very aggressive with the promotions going on. And personally, I can live with all these commercials because I like having more sports books. You know, I don't want these conglomerates like DraftKings and FanDuel to absorb all these other books at some point. Then we just have like three monopolies controlling the market. Like, it's going to be so difficult to get an edge at that point. So that's kind of my fear. That wouldn't happen for a long time, but it's I guess it's something that's possible down the line. But I know. I kind of do agree with the side that the regulated space kind of allows for this to be more easily detected. Are you not in the same sort of boat as that?
No, I do think that there's truth to that statement. I just think it's kind of a half truth of, sure, it allows for it to be more easily detected, but it also allows for it to more easily happen, you know, like,
right.
It's just, you can just get more money down because the space is regulated and you can do it more easily. And also, I think these new books, you know, DraftKings, FanDuel, Caesars, maybe not new, but I just think they are looking for such massive whales. These are publicly traded companies. So they allow for, you know, these massive potential whales where they can kind of flip and then you have some problems going on. So I think there is truth to it, but I also think it like enables both. Like, yeah, fine. It allows for more of it to get caught, but it also allows for more of it to go on.
So the NBA, I kind of agree with you, will lay down an absolute hammer on Jonte Porter and will try to deter any of this from ever happening again, because yeah, it looks upon them very poorly. But at the end of the day, betting is a massive revenue stream for the NBA, massive revenue stream for the broadcasting companies that are involved with these betting deals. Like you see it just all the time, everywhere, absolutely. But it's a huge money-making business, and it makes, like, the betting companies make a ton of money, and the broadcasting companies make money. The league makes a lot of money, and as long as that's happening, you know, people are going to protect their wallets in this instance. So I don't really see anything changing for a good period of time. Personally, my thought of it is that the regulated space, I like you said, it does lead to this happening more. Hopefully that's deterred, but you know, this stuff can be caught a little bit easier as well. The whole gambling is controlled, government regulated as well, so less likely to have any issues with getting stiffed, with losing money, having issues with withdrawing money. So obviously there's good and bad, but I think there's more good to the space right now than there is bad, considering where perhaps it used to be. I'm not as well versed in the space, so maybe you can speak on that. I've only ever really been seriously betting in the regulated space, so I guess we'll leave it on, like, final question from this sort of topic here. Do you think that the big changes are going to be on the way as a result of something like this or the Ohtani situation in the MLB?
No, I don't. I think that if, you know, four more things break, you know, in the next 6 to 12 months, then people might need to start looking in the mirror and think, oh, God, or something worse happens, or they determine Temple was rigging games, or they find, you know, a slew of teams were rigging games, then I think maybe they have to start looking at things. But I still think you can kind of squint your eyes and say these are all kind of isolated incidents. The Ohtani thing at the end of the day is probably going to end up being nothing, and honestly doesn't matter that much. Like, if he was betting on other stuff, who cares? If it was him betting, I don't know, that story's all completely ridiculous as well. Jonte's a really bad look, but again, it's totally not name brand player who didn't affect games. He just kind of rigged his own props and just left the game in a minute. So yeah, I think they're going to
get a chance. I think he had a chance of making an NBA roster next season.
Yeah, but potentially, but
he's a fringe roster player.
He's just not an important player in the NBA that the story people will care too much about. Like, I think if it starts getting worse, then there is potential for change. Like, we're at a bit of a breaking point. But I think if nothing else comes through, then it'll mostly be business as usual.
Okay, fair enough. There have been some big events in history, but like for rigging games, like Arizona State in the 90s with the point shaving that went on. There's been big ones abroad as well. I think there's like a cricket one in South Africa from the late 90s/early 2000s. I don't know. Regardless, this has been happening for a long time, these sorts of things, but obviously they're probably going to happen more now. So hopefully the NBA does clamp down on something like this. Okay. I think that's enough on that topic. Let's shift to the actual on-court stuff involved with the NBA, because the Houston Rockets have caught absolute fire in the Western Conference. They've won 10 games in a row and out of nowhere have thrusted themselves into a potential play-in tournament position At the same time, the Warriors stuttering a little bit. When 2 weeks ago, was it? I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, we did the tier list where you were saying the Jazz might finish ahead of the Rockets. And the Warriors, we both said, are probably the safest bet to be in the playoffs out of the teams currently in the playing position. What a complete shift. The NBA changes so quickly here. For starters, let's talk about the Houston Rockets, Jalen Green, and how well he's been playing. How has this team managed to turn around their fortune so quickly and so sharply?
Yeah, well, you said it right there. It's they kind of just turned their offensive engine to Jalen Green and haven't missed a beat at all. The defense has maintained being very strong, which it has been all season, which I don't think is shocking that Şengün going down hasn't resulted in a major defensive shift. He's not a particularly good defensive player. I think the thing that is shocking is the offense has, I think, improved since he's gone down with that injury. And a lot of that has been, you know, let's give all that usage to Jalen Green and let him cook. And he's been honestly unbelievable. And it's a bit of a franchise shifting run right here, just because, you know, there were reports that they were trying to trade Jalen Green and picks for Mikal Bridges. Jalen Green might be better than Mikal Bridges now if he keeps this up. So I think that, yeah, it's been a pretty incredible run led by Jalen Green. The rest of the team is solid. Fred's obviously just a rock steady, good point guard. Jabari's been good. The bench has been good. Their young guys have been good. Cam Whitmore's been out, but he's actually going to be really good. Amen, if he can ever figure out a shot, is good, but he's been a solid player, a ridiculous rebounder for his size as well. So yeah, I think it's mostly been, you know, the ability to maintain that defense while shifting all that usage to Jalen Green and having kind of maintain the like decent enough efficiency that they let their defense win them games.
Yeah, and a point that Pips brought up on one of our morning shows, he's a Houston fan, so he's obviously enjoying this, is that Alperen Şengün exiting. I'm not trying to spin it like they're better without Şengün, but it allows them to play a super switchable defense with Jabari Smith at the five, and having Van Vliet, who has so consistently played like way above his size defensively, kind of allows you to do that with your point guard as well. I'm not trying to say that they're better without Alperen Şengün, but it's just interesting that their ability to play this switchable defense and to give more of the keys to Jalen Green on offense definitely is a catalyst in why they've been winning so many games here. But at the same time, with the Rockets doing well, the Warriors kind of faltering as well. It kind of looked like they turned a corner. Was it like a month, 2 months ago? They found a lineup that really started to work. It was Podziemski, Curry. Or it was Curry, Wiggins, Kuminga, Dre, and then either Podziemski or Klay Thompson. Now, it was better with Pods instead of Klay, but no matter which of those two rounded off the five, that lineup was working wonders. Now this team is faltering a little bit. 5-5 in their last 10 games. That's obviously not bad here, but with the Rockets right on their heels, even though the Warriors have the easier schedule, I mean, how has the season come to this for the Warriors? They might even miss out on the play-in tournament. This is a team that 2 years ago in the championship had aspirations to get back to that sort of level.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the right answer might be they're just not that good of a team. Like, they're solid. They're fine. It's interesting, though, because the Warriors have been getting bet pretty much every single game, like, over the last 2-3 weeks. Take massive steam every game. So it seems like the market honestly still maintains that this is a pretty good team. I think it's hard to play Draymond at center as much as they have. They've went way smaller. He's a bit older. He's not as athletic as he used to be. He was never the most athletic player. But it's hard to ask a 6'7 guy to play center for this long of a stretch in the NBA season. And I also think that Kerr just hasn't trusted Kuminga as much as he should. I think Kuminga's a really solid player. He still like gets benched. He still struggles to get over 30 minutes sometimes. They don't really give him the keys when Steph is off. So, I think they're fine. It hasn't really been so much them being terrible. They've been fine, and Houston just hasn't lost a game. They're, like you said, they've won 10 straight. So it's a bit less of a Warriors story. Now we have kind of two seasons of them being, you know, a bit of an above 500 team, and they were a championship team 2 years ago. It was a pretty stunning championship. And then they also all aged out. Like, Steph is older and worse. Draymond is older and worse. Klay is older and worse. Kuminga has stepped up, but the, you know, Wiseman flamed out. Moody's kind of an end of the bench rotation guy. Chris Paul hasn't really been able to add anything. They also, Jordan Poole, we forget, but Jordan Poole was good. He was a good basketball player 2 years ago. What happened to him? I don't know. But Jordan Poole was very solid for this team 2 years ago as well. So, yeah, I think we just kind of have that the information that this is probably a bit better of a, than a 500 team in the regular season with some upside potential when it comes to the playoffs. They were pretty solid in the playoffs last year, struggled against LA, but beat the Kings in the first round. So, yeah, I think that this is kind of just what the Warriors are, you know, like a 53-54% win team, you know, 45 wins-ish. So, yeah, I think it's tough. I think they still make the play-in, most likely.
Yeah,
Houston's also had a pretty cupcake schedule and some three-point shooting luck. So, you know, I haven't upgraded them as though, you know, they're like now better than the Warriors. I would have the Warriors considerably better if they played on a neutral court. So, yeah, I think most of the story is how Houston has been so good without Şengün rather than the Warriors. And it's more just kind of like the Warriors, the Lakers, you know, Dallas even. It's kind of like those are kind of teams we know now. If, you know, these are a lot of sample games where they're just not going to be able to ramp it up for a full 82-game regular season and consistently churn out those wins.
There's going to be a really fun game next week on Thursday when these two teams play against each other. The Warriors already have the tiebreaker, and they have the easier schedule, which does also lead me to believe that they will maintain their play-in tournament position. But Houston, definitely right on the heels here. Final question for this topic here. When Alperen Şengün does return from injury, what sort of adjustments do you think are made, if any, to this sequence? Does this change things going forward for Houston?
Yeah, like before Şengün got hurt, they were really, he was like, had taken over even more control of the offense. And Jalen Green at points this season, what was, you know, in and out of the rotation. I remember there were times where it was potentially wasn't going to start. So yeah, but, I think
Alpi was also putting up ridiculous numbers before his injury.
100%. I'm not
monster
saying
their numbers.
I'm not. I haven't lost much. This run hasn't really made me sour on Şengün much at all. I still think he's a really solid player with some flaws. He's kind of like in that Domantas Sabonis class of player of probably never going to be, you know, like a true number one star. Maybe a bit of a hard guy to build like a real elite team around, but is a very, very solid player. And also Şengün this year, this is a better defense than Sabonis has ever been on. I think Shingun's also a bit taller, a bit of a better rim protector. So yeah, I haven't soured on Şengün at all. I just think it's more so that Houston kind of has to double down on Jalen Green and see if this is real. And my problem with Houston was, this is kind of a nice season they're having, but Jalen Green had really been struggling. Şengün looked like a solid piece, but not like really a transformative piece. And it was kind of a, where do you go from here? But if they have Şengün and Jalen Green as kind of like blue chip-esque prospects, it would really help. So yeah, I think Jalen Green probably will just maintain more usage when Şengün comes back, but I don't think it really changes the calculus on Şengün and maybe some stagger from those two as well, just because they're by far the two highest usage guys on the team.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun offseason for Houston because Jalen Green is extension eligible. This is his third season in the NBA, so eligible for that rookie extension. With a run like this, he'll be asking for the rookie max. I don't know if Houston are going to be ready to go cough that up right away, but they will have another year before he's an RFA, so not any sort of doom and gloom situation there. But let's transfer over now to the betting side of things. It's a bit of a small slate today. Granted, there's only two games, but 12 games tomorrow and potentially any futures could be listed here as we get closer to the end of the season. Anything from you, Kirk Evans, for today's show, or is the slate not good enough?
It's just such a small slate. I've got nothing today. I have a couple bets in, but nothing really I'm willing I could give out that hasn't moved that I would feel good about.
Well, so yeah, fair enough.
Nothing for me today.
Can't really blame you there. We'll just take a look in on our current, we'll call it portfolio that we have from the show. From the last stream, I actually don't quite remember what we had last stream that we did.
I think I had Bulls money line and they lost pretty bad.
Okay, yeah, I think I recall that. Just going to pull it up here. Yeah. That one wasn't cool. And you had Fred VanVleet under on points, which also, unfortunately, did not win. So 0-2 there for one of them was half a unit. But let's take a look at the portfolio. Hopefully, some catching up here. Unfortunately, the Raptors over on wins is not officially dead, but it's close to. We have this is dead, we've said for weeks. But we have Jokic MVP, which just keeps on looking better.
That's a win.
That looks like a win at this point. We have the Celtics NBA championship, which is obviously still on the cards. And if that is on the cards, obviously, as is the Eastern Conference team to win the NBA championship. So that's our current status. As well as if you watch the preseason show, I'm not sure exactly. I have to go through and verify like which person gave out which picks. But we have had a couple of overs win on the season. The New York Knicks yesterday cashed their over from the team total on preseason. They're at 44 wins. The Pacers cashed last week. The Rockets cashed last week. The Cavaliers, all of a sudden, are likely to stay under their number, which we have at 50.5, when it looked like that was toast. The Nuggets are very likely to crush their over, and we have their under. But also some player props. Chet over on points was like 13-something. He's at 16 right now. That's going to win. We have LeBron under 27. 0.2 points. He's currently at like 25. So a lot of these futures that we had on the preseason show, which we are both involved in, are looking good. So we'll keep on monitoring those. We'll keep on monitoring the picks we have here. Thanks so much, everybody, for watching the show today. We appreciate it. Thank you, RW fan, for mentioning how much they like the show. I appreciate that. Hope everybody got some value out of this. And hopefully we could provide. I haven't really seen a lot of Jonte Porter content actually discussing the betting side of this and, you know, how much money actually could have been made off a certain endeavor like this. It's just people don't quite understand the sports betting space. So hopefully we could shed some light on that situation for some people maybe who couldn't. So if you did enjoy, make sure to hit the like button, subscribe to the channel as well for more NBA betting content all throughout the regular season, the playoffs, and beyond. I'll be back tomorrow morning with Pips NBA. Kirk Evans will be back next week to join me right here on the Board YouTube channel. Hope to see you on the next one.